I think we'll, since we did McLuhan, which is a bit simpler, we're going to go back to the complex stuff. And we got his, you know, critical semiotics. We got up to page 100. Start seeing other themes here. So, page 101 of Critical Semiotics by Gary Ganosko. The subjectivities that emerge alongside the info machine. Now, that's pretty interesting. You've got my number 14, 1, and then 4. 1 is the merging of everybody into the machine or the info machine, and then alongside the info machine, people spin off with their subjectivities, paranoia, schizophrenia, panic, hysteria, and ecstasy. So this sentence finishes, expresses what I'm telling you, been telling people. The subjectivities that emerge alongside the info machine as effects of the mingling of production and anti-production, so production would be cornflakes, and anti-production would be radio shows, right? Think of hardware as production, even though software is production, but what people think is concrete stuff, that's production, and endless software, free information is anti-production. Okay, the subjectivities that emerge alongside the info machine as effects of the mingling of production and anti-production are sometimes Bill Gates and sometimes 15-year-olds doing it for the lulz or the lark, white hats and black hats, hacktivists, or netbot herders. Some become rich and powerful, others go to jail and write books about it. Many just disappear into adulthood or are turned into informants by the FBI. But perhaps it is closest to the spirit of the conjunctive synthesis to say a little of everything is assembled by each. That's Quadrophenia. Everybody's got a little bit of paranoia, schizophrenia, hysteria, panic, and ecstasy. Matter of fact, you have to be informed about it. You have to be keep up to date on it. You follow me, what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm. No.
Did you say some go informed? There, some... You have to be... Did you say
no,
you have
informed.
To be informed?
Yeah, people stay informed in the various thing, various categories.
Okay.
Informed. A bit of paranoia, hysteria, schizophrenia, and panic, and ecstasy. So it is closest to the spirit of the conjunctive synthesis, or coming to an approximate conclusion, to say a little of everything, disappearing into adulthood, writing books, going to jail, wearing a white hat, wearing a black hat, hacktivism, hacking, or being a netbot herder, a little of everything is assembled by each, made by each. That's Quadrophenia. So, here is a statement that describes the ionotic dream of cognition. Let's see. Here's you guys. Ion produces an impotent subject who ignores social and political processes that influence expression and content and the uses of meaning, trapped in an inward-looking circuit and beholden to what is inscribed in representation, in brackets a cognitarian subject of the statement or semiocapitalist subject of enunciation, rectifying every nuance and flux by overcoding them in doublets of formalization. So when you're thinking about Ion, correcting what Ion says, correcting yourself in relation to Ion, you're in the process of rectifying every nuance and flux by overcoding them in doublets of formalization.
What does that mean, Bob? Doublets of formalization.
It's you asking me what does it mean. And then I give you an answer, and then you adapt to the answer or reject it. And you overcode it with your subjectivity, what you find is meaningful.
So is that where Ion says overlay?
Yes, overlaying.
Okay.
So, let's see.
Initial part of that sentence is also interesting, Bob, about the content, not be engaging certain content.
Yes, I'll read that. Ion produces an impotent subject who ignores social and political processes. I've heard many Ionettes say, yeah, I don't pay attention to politics anymore. I don't do this. Yep. I don't do that. I can't stand people. it may look like an impotency. An impotent subject who ignores social political processes that influence expression and content and the uses of meaning are trapped in an inward-looking circuit and beholden to what is inscribed in representation. That means in visual iconography. Mm. Trapped in an inward-looking circuit and beholden to what is inscribed in representation. And then it said, explains that. That's a cognitarian subject of the statement. No, that's a cognitarian subject of the statement, thinking about what Ian stated. But it's also a semio-capitalist subject. You're a subject of enunciation and forced to be capitalist in response to it, in response to Ion. And you are constantly rectifying every nuance and flux by overcoding them in doublets of information. So then, let's see.
So it's a kind of inner tripping, too.
Yep, it's inner tripping. More words, but the same meaning.
Mm.
Okay. Here's a description of the economy. Guattari observed that capitalism relies upon and manipulates A-signifying semiotic machines. Those are machines that are not sending you relevant information. These machines are the so-called wheels of the stock market, whose ups and downs do not have an essential connection with meaningful symbolic or semiological systems. In reinforcing economic stratification through the secretions of affect. Then he says, the Dow Jones had a good day. So there's the Android meme, had a good day. They come on the news and they go, the Dow Jones had a good day. That's the A-signifying semiotic machine, which drive the stock market, and the ups and downs do not have an essential connection with any meaningful conclusion about it.
Yeah, they're so specialized that they don't mean anything to anybody.
Right. It does reinforce economic stratification. So people think somebody made some money and you didn't, so you're poorer. Through the secretions of affect, that's almost like the secretions of emotion. Okay. Here's a statement. That is to say, all of the social enters production. Capitalism, as Guattari states, seizes individuals from the inside. That's McLuhan's point. The capitalist Gutenberg galaxy altered the outside and the inside. It seized individuals from the inside. So the social mortar, the media, enters production. And that includes entering the person. Here is talking about what is subjectivity. What is your consciousness in the middle of this personal consciousness? So this formidable production. So the Android meme creates subjectivity or psychological identity. This formidable production of subjectivity has led Lazzarato to reject the description of contemporary capitalism as a mode of production. For the sake of a machine of subjectification, which the process of immaterial labor brings to a pinnacle. So starting in the 70s, as the college students got less concerned about social and political processes and just wanted to get a business degree, they were allowing their subjectivity to be aligned with the machine. So then a quote about that. On the one hand, the individual brings the subjectivation process to its pinnacle because in all these activities of self-entrepreneurship, she or he involves the immaterial, that software, and cognitive resources of her or his self. While on the other hand, she-he inclines towards identification, subjectification, and exploitation, given that she-he is both her-his own master and slave, a capitalist and a proletarian. There's your beginning of quadrophenia. The subject of enunciation and the subject of the statement. Lazzarato control, Lazzarato locates control as self-control and self-motivation. The cognitarian and semiocapitalist are the same self-valorizing and self-directed entrepreneur. Although this overlap does not in any way exhaust the strange and troubling figures, the strange and troubling figures of semiocapitalists that haunt our world. Now, that's a mouthful. You want me to read that again, or it's too ridiculous to attempt to get? Let's have a vote. Any votes? What are you guys
doing? Huge, Bob.
Well, I wouldn't read it all again, Bob. Maybe just the last. But
okay. It's how do you since you are obsolete, how do you get control? How do you simulate control? You start talking about your own self-control and self-motivation, which is a major ideology in the population. I'll take things in my own hands. I'm responsible for what I do, blah, blah, blah. All about what you can do with your will, yet it's been nihilized. It's been canceled environmentally by the android me. So that's why Lazzarato locates control. Where is control today? It's not in the master-slave relationship because everybody is both a master and slave.
Right,
it's not a capitalist proletarian position because you're both. So where is it? It's localized in self-control and self-motivation. So then the cognitarian and semiocapitalist, there's your dram of cognition. The person who wants to know what's going on, plus the one who capitalized and telling you what's going on, they're the same self-valorizing and self-directed entrepreneur. That's the android meme giving you information that you think applies to yourself. Mm-hmm. You'll notice it can't be applied to yourself. So the cognitarian and semiocapitalist, what?
Semio, what does that, I can't find
that's the world of signs. That's the anomalous. Information can be called a sign. All the events in the information highway are signs. And a big word for that is semiotics, the study of signs.
So that's signs related to the capitalist as opposed to the communist, or?
Well, the writer thinks that capitalism is the ground, so everything is filtered through capitalism. So everything is semio-capitalist. You're a semio-capitalist.
Okay.
Okay, so let's see. The cognitarian and semio-capitalist are the same self-valorizing and self-directed entrepreneur. Although this overlap does not in any way exhaust the strange and troubling figures of semio-capitalists that haunt our world.
Now, is that similar to saying what we were talking about earlier, Bob, where in the chip body we're speaking to ourselves, an audience of one, nobody else is listening?
Right. And then your goal is to make people think you're talking to them and get them to buy what you're offering. So it says here, cognitive entrepreneurialism was all the rage during the dot-com mania. And with the businesses created through the investment of intellectual assets like new search algorithms, so these are the new, you know, Silicon Valley businesses will come up with some search algorithm, or plans for the next version of the World Wide Web, alliances with investment brokers and speculators were made. So cognitive entrepreneurialism, you could say selling things to your perceptual desires, your brain, so you have new content on your computer. So cognitive entrepreneurialism was all the rage during the dot-com mania. That's at the end of the 90s. And with the businesses created through the investment of intellectual assets like new search algorithms and plans for the next version of the World Wide Web, that created alliances between investment brokers and speculators and the cognitive entrepreneurialists. The luster of financial capital not only turned many beneficiaries of the new economy into market apologists, they're called cyber libertarians, but introduced the cheap pleasures of daytime and microtime trading. Daytime trading and micro trading. Of course, much of this crashed with the dot-com market bust between 2000 and 2002 and the acceleration of the real estate market, artificially buoyed by cynical subprime loans, which began to burst in 2007. So this part of the book gets into economics and labor and management problems, different weird evaporated economies. So the introductory quote is from Guattari, where he says, capital is not an abstract category, but rather a semiotic operator. What does this mean? It means that while the labor process is fragmented, extended, recomposed, and decomposed through deterritorialization of all kinds, the process of valorization or making values integrates all the fragments of capitalist production, not only or not simply through the abstract functioning of the laws of value, but also through the concrete direct action of the technologies, allowing the instantaneous movement of information. So the economy is based on instantaneous movement.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
But would that be the reason why companies were so focused on vision and values and all of that stuff?
Yeah. That's valorization is the content.
They're trying to inculcate what the company's values were, and in actual fact, they weren't real values. It was just trying to mimic
signs of value.
Signs, yes. Yes.
Simulation. So they would create an artificial stratification, as if you got something and someone else didn't.
And that's why they constantly have to change.
That the value has to spread.
Go ahead.
Okay, what's Gene saying?
I'm thinking that's why they constantly have to change. The mission statement has to be rewritten because they have to be constantly moving. That's what's valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Michael.
Yeah, I was going to say that this idea of value has to go right across every part of the capitalist machine, otherwise it falls away. And that was I was getting from it. Every part of capitalism must have part of the value stream, and that's what makes it common with all others.
Mm. Yeah.
Whatever we equate as value at any given point in time, that's what keeps things going.
Yeah, and workers become accessories or conscious limbs of machines.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So in order to become part of the machine, you had to buy into those values.
Well, no, you were dragged into it. You couldn't stop being made machinic because the environments for the last 100 years were providing us the only way you could eat. But that is not the only situation. The laborer is also king when they're not working. Get all these service environments around for them to engage. So master and slave is what each one of us is.
Doubled.
Mm. And you could say that's master and slave is a chemical body thing. There's also weird experiences in the astral body, the TV body, and the chip body, not just the chemical body.
But that even reduces that, you know, the concept of the factors of production. He's saying that labor, human labor, is no longer a factor. It just goes along with it. It's an extension of the machine, you said.
Yeah, it's a limb of the machine.
It's indistinguishable. It's not its own category anymore.
Right.
Woo.
All right. Now, there's the body. The anthropomorphic physical becomes bigger than the android meme. Here's a paragraph to might say that. Lazzarato develops this distinction quite nicely by specifying that machinic enslavement works with affects, percepts, comportments, imaginations, desires, and a signifying part signs and places. These flush with machines, while subjectivity is a more social or macro scale identity in which forced adaptation and alienation are evident and quantifiable. So subjection is giant.
Yeah.
That's the AT getting bigger than the AM.
Mm.
Macro scale identity. Let's see. Now,
Bob, would you see that now being dismantled?
No, the machine will continue. Your relationship to it is what's going to be dismantled or improved or survived.
Okay.
Through our products.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's a statement. The machinic register of the semiotic production of capital operates on the basis of a signifying semiotic. So the statement of meaning is not as environmental as the non-communicating android meme, non-communicating to the chemical body. So with that in mind, listen to this. The machinic register of the semiotic production of capital operates on the basis of a signifying semiotics that tune in directly to the body, in brackets, to its effects, its desires, its emotions and perceptions by means of signs. So tunes into the body by means of signs. Machinic enslavement and a signifying semiotics work together. Work together.
Mm.
Here's a statement, a description of the Android meme. Machinic components like part signs. Machinic components like part signs help to develop the aforementioned phylum within their historical and logical entanglements. But Guattari emphasizes that there is diagrammatic potentiality at play. These are the services of the Android meme. In these knotted components of semiotic and immaterial formations, that software, semiotic and immaterial, not all of this potential is exhausted in being actualized, but remains imminent, sort of pervasive, not as a reserve, but enfolded, always looming, always just. So there's lots of potentiality lurking in the Android meme to further seduce you.
And say that last statement, always folded, but folded.
Always looming, always just. Yeah, but enfolded, always looming, always just. So it says, surprises and autonomous shifts within the endomene await construction according to new paradigms, like Guattari's ethico-aesthetic paradigm. That's ethics and aesthetics. Not everyone is so hopeful. As Berardi suggests, the general intellect, remember the audience of the intellect is wiped off the deck, the general intellect is in a condition of ignorance in the space at the end of all futures. Yet in this is a hopeful therapeutic poetry of failure that the cognitariat will reconnect with themselves. Quote, we have to start from the ignorance of the general intellect. The force of collective intelligence is boundless, theoretically, but it currently lacks any consciousness of itself. Intelligence without self-consciousness. Fractalized work, Berardi claims, cannot set in motion a wave of rebellion.
Fractalized work. Compartmentalization of consciousness.
Okay, here's another description of the Android meme. Under semiocapitalism, or under the Android meme, it appears that machinic enslavement has reached a peak of sorts, given the integration of processes of subjectification and machinism in the info webs of the machinic phylum. So you got different parts of the Android meme. It's basically called the machinic phylum, and it has processes of subjectification, you having identity, and merging and operation of machines. Emerging with. Now, in terms of unions and what's the union for, here's a description. Info producers can be seen as neuro workers. The entire lived day becomes subject to a semiotic activation which becomes directly productive only when necessary. Berardi defined semiotic fragments temporally or within time. This is the first of two key time-based comments he will make. The potential for escaping from the exploitation of semiocapitalism looms in the virtuality of the part signs and autonomous effects relayed by workers who are enslaved by network life, propped up by pharmaceuticals and primed for fielding commands to produce.
Go back to that. What do you mean, only when necessary? That sentence that ends, only when necessary.
Okay. The dream of capital. This is the dream of the medium of money, or of a collection of media, which you call wealth or capital. The dream of capital, that of absorbing every possible atom of time at the exact moment the productive cycle needs it. In this way, workers offer their entire day to capital and are paid only for the moments when their time is made cellular. Info producers can be seen as neuro workers. The entire lived day becomes subject to a semiotic activation which becomes directly productive only when necessary. So a lot of reserve capitalism, reserve chip bodies waiting to be activated.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like you have a job
yeah.
which takes up, say, 8 hours of your day, but the rest of your hours of your day have to support that job, but you're not getting paid for doing that. You're only getting paid for showing up at the work itself.
Mm. Right. Let's see. Semiotic fragments are defined temporally or within time. This is the first of two key time-based comments he will make. The potential for escaping from the exploitation of semiocapitalism, dropping out, looms in the virtuality, the way this could happen, looms in the virtuality of the part signs and autonomous effects that are relayed by workers who are enslaved by network life, propped up by pharmaceuticals, and primed for fielding commands to produce. The potential for escaping from the exploitation of semiocapitalism looms in the virtuality of the part signs and autonomous effects that are created by workers who are enslaved. But the ones who get the technology that was made have potential for escaping from virtuality.
And the only way to survive that enslavement is by being on drugs.
Yeah. And that's listed. The worker is propped up by pharmaceuticals.
By pharmaceuticals, yeah.
So here's Gary Ganasco lays out his intellectual question. My central problematic is the relationship between semiotic and immaterial fluxes and how they connect under the semiotic machining of subjectivity. So here you have fake pinheads being made by the Android meme. And they're worrying about what is semiotic or concrete and what is immaterial fluxes. And there's a lot of both going on. Mm. It's worth repeating, as Berardi tells us, quote, semiocapital is capital flux that coagulates in semiotic artifacts without materializing itself. So it ain't doing nothing. Just like the Secret Council 10 and my buddies. We ain't involved in the economy that way. My central problematic, says Gary, is the relationship between semiotic and immaterial fluxes and how they connect under the semiotic machining of subjectivity. It is worth repeating, as Berardi tells us, quote, semiocapital is capital flux that coagulates in semiotic artifacts without materializing itself. Internal mutual communication. Okay, where is that? Just a second. Okay, next. Are we okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Here is a section called Varieties of Immateriality. critical insight into the coagulation of capital flux in semiotic artifacts. So here you got this flow, and it can't stop, but it's got to pretend to stop and create a semiotic artifact. So critical insight. Oop, this is Sean, I guess, needs to be unmuted. Critical insight into the coagulation of capital flux and semiotic artifacts expresses how perception itself, you know how we talk about percepts, can participate in the process of actualizing virtual part objects. So McLuhan talked about percepts versus concepts, that perception has become very more complex, extrapolated, embedded in and out than simple percepts. This was often discussed by Guattari in terms of theoretical objects, whose existence was only subsequently and retroactively confirmed, sounds like subatomic particles, or denied by experimental demonstration. But until then, it happily subsisted within a theoretical totality. So we saw the word actualizing virtual part object. You, in a way, are a virtual part object, one-fifth chemical body. So actualization does not require hard materialization. Critical perception of conceptualization is sufficient to make non-material products slow down and pool, settling in semiotic artifacts. So if you can talk a good bureaucratic jargonistic line, you might help virtual society say that it's being framed by something. So user affects, not effects, user affects, like postings of members of, quote, communities of consumers who co-produce innovation. Look at this. They co-produce innovation, diversification, and identification with the brand. These help to create bonds among affects and intensities that cling to semiotic artifacts, the construction, which is the construction of attention or interest as an intangible asset in management theory. This occurs even among hypermaterial commodities such as automobiles, some of which also have attractive and effective cool quotients. So you have the old hardware media being graphized, put within software accounting patterns, and they acquire a non-existence too, hypermaterial commodities such as automobiles.
Yeah.
Hypermaterial can mean the super gadgets in a car now. Gadgets, services, monitoring, blood pressure, taking stuff. These are hypermaterial commodities, maybe, if I'm reading this right. Both Guattari and Berardi emphasize that entire circuits and overlapping and communicating assemblages are engaged in the machinic integration of cognitive behavior and the capitalist exploitation of its content. It's almost like cognitive behavior is what's left. It's you sitting at the screen doing screenal duties. It's a cognitive economy. Thinking is doing, McLuhan used to say. Thinking now is doing. What is this content that the capitalist exploits? Is it mental or non-material? When is it materialized? Mental as opposed to manual labor involves a closing of the gap between execution and innovation and a deferral of materialization. Berardi's explanation contains an interesting qualification. Quote, the materials to be transformed are simulated by digital sequences. Now, just look at all the things that are being digitized in all the different factories. So this is a statement of what's going on. If it sounds difficult, it's because you haven't noticed what's around you in industrial parks and everywhere else as you plod your way to work. The materials to be transformed are simulated by digital sequences. Productive labor, labor production value, consists in enacting simulations later transferred to actual matter by computerized windows. I'll read it again. Productive labor, labor producing as a value, consists in enacting simulations that are later transferred to actual matter by computerized machines. In this second temporal qualification, labor thus loses its, quote, residual materiality in mental work, on abstract signs rich in knowledge. This takes place in a network environment where communication, but not only this category, but it is often separated from creation and is as dull and repetitive as some manual work, that is. Cyber sweatshops that specialize in building cheap websites and designing info products that serve as advertising vehicles, all that is worked with rather than being physically transformed. In the process, connectivity is enriched and extended. Flexibility and fluidity are imposed in such labor by the reticular formats, and those are software programs, platforms, and templates. And these reticular formats frame, capture, command, and recombine the fragments. So the Android
is that,
can...
Is that not... Yeah?
Go ahead.
Is that not the introduction?
Hmm? You got nailed? Yeah, you're there. There's two South Africans there. But you just dropped off. So we have to wait for Nick to come back.
Hmm.
So, so we see how hardware and materiality is intermingling with hybrid, immaterial software apps. Okay. So what is the productive labor? So in a second example, temporal qualification. And so in the second temporal qualification, labor loses its residual materiality in mental work on abstract signs rich in knowledge. This takes place in a network environment where communication, but not only this category, but we read that. That's the to get down to the bottom. Flexibility and fluidity are imposed in such labor by the reticular formats, software programs, platforms, and templates that frame, capture, command, and recombine the fragments. Okay. Now listen to this. Several features of post-Fordist, you know, post-assembly line. Interesting that Mayor Ford was trying to retrieve the old chemical body values. So he was trying to get back to a Fordist world. Several features of post-Fordist production are worth mentioning here. Industrial labor doesn't disappear. It is relocated to regions where wages are low and employment and environmental regulations are lax. Right? You get that? Ship the jobs out to other places.
Yes.
Industrial labor doesn't disappear, is relocated to regions where wages are low and employment and environmental regulations are lax. Certain segments of cognitive activity follow along and are externalized for the same reasons. Accompanying Berardi's deferral, geographic marginalization of the moment of hard materialization is the automated support of the processes of recombination so that program languages, data formats, and the rest cohere and combine into a legible frame for an info commodity that may need a material support. So the geographic marginalization of the hardware world, the actual making and putting together of the gadgets, requires the recombinating that's going on in the information world, in program language, the data formats, and the rest, or in the news. So the software motivates the hardware.
And the geographical location is meaningless.
Yeah. Other than you get it to the third world, or what's called the third world.
Yeah.
You get it to garbage zones that nobody's there deciding how many people died, unless there's some special UN NGO.
That's how it keeps going. It just keeps going. It relocates.
Yeah. It can move.
Yeah, it keeps
moving. You know, when people, when the inventor of this stuff said, hey, this will maybe you'll be able to move things around, a lot more advantages and this and that, but actually it gets used by the criminal class. They can move around better. People don't think about criminals unless they panic in response to the headlines. But you're not thinking, oh, this new technology that I'm going to buy for my kid, that's going to create huge disservices in other parts of the world. And you don't want to think about what's going on. McLuhan once said, people don't notice or think about what's going on or contemplate it because they would go insane if they did.
Hacking is an example of that, Bob.
Hacking, yeah. Hacking is immaterial work, cognitive routine. Is that what you mean? By hacking? Michael, you were here.
Bob, I'm sorry, I'm back. You were saying we don't think about what the criminals are going to do with the technology when new technologies come out. And
right.
So with the chip landscape, we had the hackers, which was a different type of terrorist people didn't even consider before.
Right. You know? And you watch the criminals on all the TV dramas. They show all the different things criminals do. As a matter of fact, McLuhan used to say that prisoners love TV because they can study how to beat the system or how to make new crimes by watching all the crime shows. Occasionally, they're going to get an idea that they can use. So it's free education of criminals is out there, yet they're still giving out Oscars and Emmys.
Bizarre.
Yeah, Hollywood's educating the criminal class.
Yeah.
Now, you could meet a director and tell him this, and he can pass you off because he's got to go to his red carpet celebration of the opening night. This is where the breakdown of community happens, of any community control of the environment, because you can tell somebody, you can complain, and they know that you're never going to get anywhere with the issue. So there'll be the spreading of indifference happens in communication between people. And then that leads to ironic, satirical interaction. So Saturday Night Live or all the comedy shows, endless cynical interpretation of the buddy you're drinking with. An endless cynical interpretation of you.
Yeah, and satirizing the criminal. I mean, he pointed out that the government hires the criminal for his expertise.
Yes. So you could have, who point that out?
Early on, Janesco did.
Oh, okay. All right.
I can't remember specifically. Maybe information hackers or something. He said they have certain.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. I can't recall. It's too late.
Right. In this respect, Berardi wants to pay close attention to how the machinic arrangements of fixed capital are evolving and reacting to semiotization of the production process in a mutating artifactual ecology with long tendrils reaching across the globe. Even so, partial manufacturing may be spread widely. And these semiotically unformed fragments coordinated by computerized assembly in another peripheral location, then a quote, the process of production is in large part dematerialized. To be fair, one may also say that production is in some part still materialized, which suggests that semiomaterial connective syntheses display a signifying polyvocity. Now that would be multiple voices coming from the non-communicating Android meme, and also much irregularity. While the disjunctive syntheses tend toward two extreme poles of A signifying semiotization or remnants of industrial materialization, the conjunctive synthesis focus on the kinds and degrees of social subjection and subjectifications of labor. Not sure what conjunctive synthesis are, but sounds like as the interplay of a little bit of leftover hardware and increasing expansion of software, that tactile interplay, creates a concern about your social identity. What's that? Sean, have you flipped out? Or is that Michael singing to himself?
Yeah, Bob. I'm just quickly sending the kids to school, then I'll talk again.
Okay. All right. So you see, you've got a repeated use of the word simio, subjectivities, machinic phylum, a signifying. All these terms can be applied to the makeup of my Android meme chart. So then, Berardi wants to see if anybody is dropping out. Oh, I forgot to say that A signifying polyvocity. That's the polyvocal, you know, univocal and polyvocal. A signifying, not being geared to any human audience. That polyvocity is quadriphenia, right there in the machine. So I find it interesting that this guy is describing very close to what I mean by my chart, using a limited range of terms to mix and match. So we know the term cognitariat. So Berardi wants to what Berardi wants to find is evidence of the cognitariat's withdrawal from the simio capitalist networks. Now, how do you withdraw? And the shapes taken by its independent, self-directed organizations. So you have people trying to start their own businesses, their own gigs. They're the shapes taken by its independent, self-directed organizations, since capital cannot really organize it. Capital can't organize it. It's within the Android meme. So you have a cognitarian insurrection. That is what Berardi is interested in. And that would be a chemical body insurrection. The language of coagulation, we saw that in the digital economy, the language of coagulation suggests then not a direct and immediate concreteness, but a soft, viscous, and centrifugal semiotics of actualization, displaying attention to the divergences of semiotic types, gradients of unformedness, variations between abstract and concrete poles, degrees of activity, and container effects, which he calls artifacts. That's like Ion saying a building is a space-time marker. It's a container effect.
Mm.
Now, look at this. Coagulation of blood is a chemical process of clogging that requires the internal and active presence of platelets and specific proteins that become sticky. Anything you want to say about that, Carol? Coagulation of blood is a chemical process of clogging that requires the internal and active presence of platelets and specific proteins that become sticky.
No, true statement.
Okay. Most importantly, the theory of semiocapitalism can learn from the complexity of actualization. How it contains a measure of inactuality that makes it impossible to exhaustively grasp and suggests the fundamental fragmentariness of potentialities and manifestations and their mixing and remixing or recombination through the capitalistic networks, but in ways that confirm openness and multiplicity. So you see you have increasing incredible services of autonomy mixed in with incredible centralizing monster takeover. Both happening like 50-50. Anybody hear what I'm saying? Can you get that? You've got things that can be exhaustively grasped, measures of inactuality, complexity of actualization, fragmentariness of potentialities, manifestations, and then they're mixing and remixing in networks that confirm openness and multiplicity. And it is this always ready intervention that theorists of semiocapitalism want to regain from the capitalist exploitation of non-material products of immaterial labor. Look at that. Capitalist exploitation of non-material products of immaterial labor. Immaterial labor. Nothing, exploiting nothing. But they are hardware, they are software content. Pulling out, redirecting and reapplying the potential coalesced countervalently adjacent to their semiotic actualizations, stealing it away from capital semio operations, from evaporating in the chimerical value production of financial capital, that's hard to tell what the value is, it's always changing, and forging a social time distinct from capital time. But coalescence is not coagulation, as it is a process of merging that is abstract and temporary, in addition to requiring an external influence. And that can be air currents merging water droplets, or consonants merging in a new phonetic articulation in our mouths. In other words, this is why Berardi likes WikiLeaks, Occupy Wall Street, student protests, debt strikes, anti-austerity struggles, because all of these provide impetus for coalescence so that general intellect can find a social, there's that intellect again, scraped off the floor of the deck of the deck, so that general intellect can find a social body that was denied to it by the conditions of simio capital. Producers may coalesce, but simio products coagulate. So another case I've noted, the anthropomorphic physical becoming bigger than the Android meme. The coalescence is an anti-environment to the coagulation.
Mm.
So
no, I have a statement here. And
right. Though you can grab content patterns and autonomize them somehow. You can spiral off with your own life coaching.
As an entrepreneur.
As a what?
As an entrepreneur, he was talking about, right? That
entrepreneur or interpreter?
Entrepreneur. I have to turn the lights on.
What's entrepreneur? Oh, entrepreneur is what you're saying, not entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Entrepreneur, yes. You, who've never been an entrepreneur, can't pronounce it. It's new.
Can't pronounce the word.
Okay. I have here iandom in the notes, so let's see how this expresses iandom. Having arrived from no determinate place, that is, not from a quantifiable standing reserve, it comes as a surprise. That's ion. Rise from no determinate place. As a non-resource, ion cannot be exploited as such. But as a species of sudden arrival, it resists specific renderings, yet holds much hope and difficulty to channel into the multitude as a distributed network, and the production of the common, or the refusal of work that cultivates new forms of autonomy, or molecular revolutionary perturbations at any number of points of fractalized labor. I am telling you, do your own thing. Get happy, because you're in a world of fractalized labor.
Refusal of work, is what I heard.
Yes. Yeah, that one's easy to get. So reading it again, ion, as a non-resource, you can't fucking exploit it. As a non-resource, it cannot be exploited as such. But as a species of sudden arrival, it's a kind of sudden arrival, it resists specific renderings, yet holds much hope and difficulty to channel into the multitude as a distributed network and the production of the common, or the refusal of work that cultivates new forms of autonomy, or molecular revolutionary perturbations at any number of points of fractalized labor.
Mm-hmm.
See, not that you get this immediately, but the point is this actually practical talk, but it has to be contradictory or paradoxical all the way along, because it's dealing with the chemical body, and if you don't indicate the other bodies, then the chemical body is riddled with contradictions in what it's doing, not necessarily defeating, but look at all the factors that you're involved in.
Pretty incredible writing.
Right. And what it is, it's processing, is reading. It's a lot of other people writing this stuff, and he's trying to sort of synthesize it or create an overall explanation of what it's about. So you've got the coagulations happening in the immaterial, and you've got the potentiality of hopeful coalescences. So you've got maybe semiotic coagulations. That's a lot of making of nodes. And then the opposite is the hopeful coalescence or matchings.
That almost sounded a bit ironic to me, Bob. if I understand the coalescence thing, could that be seen as all the bodies into one?
Yeah.
Instead of clogging to other defracted bodies.
Right.
But society
and if you clog, if you coalesce them into one or coagulate them into one, that can be a disservice too.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, Ion says we can't do nothing with stuck and coagulating.
Yeah. And there's lots of flow going on. I have here the pentatic. That would be the machine describing itself or the machine operating for its own management. So let's see if this, if we can see that in here. The struggle, okay. In other words, the direct exploitation of general intellect by semiocapitalism compels subjectivity to enunciate more and more like the non-human machines into which it is increasingly plugged and assembled, but not ultimately into which cognitive activity is totally and infinitely subsumed. Yet the struggle against semiocapital's efforts to form subjectivity so that it hangs on a single designation of value and subsumes all the diverse types of valorization, that's values of aesthetic, of desiring and ecosophical values, to surplus value is, Guattari identified, the deathly heart, in quotes, the deathly heart of all universes of value that draws them in and tries to obliterate them. As a semiotic operator, capitalism attempts to pump the implosion of value into the raw material of subjectivity, toxifying machinic inventiveness and transversal creativity, and devolving enunciative diversity. Devolving enunciative diversity is that people wouldn't know what to say. It accomplishes these by fragmenting time, boldly integrated into the machinic network, general semiotic capacities, and making wages as minimal as the time mobilized transversally on demand. The result of semiotic labor in the age of semiocapital is an info commodity that need not achieve substantiation. That's like Finnings Wake. Doesn't have to be complete. Flirting with substance, pretending it's material, flirting with substance, the info commodity retains a strange gelatinous desolidity. So you could talk about Ion being all this non-material situations, immaterial. But the digital environment is miming the characteristics we understand that Ion has. So this is the merging of electricity and the guff. See what I'm saying?
Mm.
Flirting with substance, the info commodity retains a strange gelatinous desolidity. Guattari's interpretation of Zemslev, particular theorist, move the analysis of production away from physical objects with determinate qualities. The social biophysiological means of articulation and social understandings of semiotic substance, they were all moved away from. Or they, let's see, the analysis of production move the analysis of production away from physical objects, sociality, social biophysiological means of articulation, and social understandings of semiotic substances. What were they moved towards? Toward productive creativity yielding an immaterial result, in brackets, semiotic segments, that is combined with other such segments. The immaterial products of immaterial or mostly mental labor display both liquidity, which Berardi indexes to the liquefaction of time, and hence the semiotic flows keep the info commodity from completely hardening, and temporariness linked to the unrelenting speeds of electronic information environments. So you see how it's a constant ambiguity on any noun that's brought up. Are we in debt? Did we get out of debt? Is there a debt? Have we gone over too much debt? Is there employment? Is there unemployment? In this flux between immateriality or software and hardware, No wonder no categories can be determined. And so you can see the average little man's bureaucratic mind is going to get pretty crazy in this situation and start to put his foot down over nonsensical issues.
Thinking is doing.
Yeah. Doing is not anything. I mean, physical body, kinetic doing is just
right.
for entertainment.
Right.
And entertainment then is also part of the economy. So it's exactly like thinning its wake. All these processes of mingling, overlaying, intertwining with.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what little man makes up. That's the creativity. It's the little man thinks it up to respond to to the schizophrenia of the environment now. Uh-oh. Am I gone?
I can hear you, Jean.
Oh,
can you hear me?
I can hear you. Bob's gone.
Oh, no.
It's just us. Where's the boys from Africa?
People.
I'm here, Jean. I was just busy having breakfast.
I'm here too.
Good. Good.
Bob missing.
He's gone. Blitzrig. I'm horizontal. I'm barely here. Just barely.
What is your time there? What's your timing there, Jean?
It's after 3 or after 2. Hold on, everything's dark now. 2:45 a.m.
Yeah. The body wants to.
Yes. Yeah, I just got to make sure I mute before I snore.
No, don't spoil it.
We love your snoring, Jean.
I don't think you've heard it yet. You can't say that. Unless you heard it in your dreams. In another world. Maybe in another world,
yeah.
We all snore together.
Yeah, I wonder if that doing that Bob's referring to now, because he says it's useless, I wonder if that's like all the efforts, you can relate it to like the efforts on Facebook, clicking, sharing, doing fundraisers and all that palaver, as opposed to just knowing.
Yeah, I relate to it as the doings that come from my literate mind, my narrative, and all the rules and all the linear things that I would follow to get from one place to another, and all the effort for that, and that whole world is gone. So it doesn't mean being completely stagnant, but it means more like what Ion says now, follow your joy, because this whole idea that we had a series of doings that was reliable in delivering us from one point to another, it just doesn't work in this world anymore. And so I look at the doings from that, you know, those doings, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Stop all the doings.
But it doesn't mean inactivity.
No.
Otherwise, Bob wouldn't surf, you see. So it's not about inactivity.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, what did you say,
it's
Michael? I couldn't speak. What did you say that it relates to Ion? Could you just repeat what everybody just agreed to?
About the doings.
Jean was saying the doings that drop away. And I was equating that to the doings related to the narrative or the internal dialogues that become doings that we believe are going to take us somewhere, and maybe doings related to our education system, et cetera, of how to get ahead. But in this environment, none of those things apply anymore. And that's why Ayan says, follow your joy, because it's a way of short-circuiting this thing that there's a particular thing to do. Even in this environment, there isn't any particular thing to do. But following the joy is like the common denominator of what of still having activity. And not because a lot of people hear you don't do anything, and then they equate that with inactivity. But it's got nothing to do with that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be surfing if it were, had to do with inactivity. But there's still activity, but the doing for me is driven by something that's maybe rear view mirror or driven by an environmental circumstances that no longer apply.
Yeah, so this is the services of our situation. Great environment for enhancing your perception of contradictions within experience. So you have to be careful about your definitions of anything that you can say about yourself. It must include the opposite. They're always sociologically talking about the materializing and the dematerializing and the presenting and the absenting. You know, that's what the, both are happening, and it's inside a weird tactility.
Yeah, because one's doing was applied to actually seeing something happen as in terms of making something, some material impact, whereas, and then a lot of people are involved in doings now which don't appear to have any material aspect to them, and yet they're still evolved and completely active.
Yes. Mm.
So that just shifts what doing is, you know, so it keeps moving. It's a goalpost that keeps moving.
So that's why you engage what we're doing here or ION, the continuous changing, defining, redefining, restating, keeps you on top of the natural tendency to get stuck.
Keeps the Velcro from getting caught.
Right. So, let's see. So that since you, doing nothing is not what it used to be. Doing something is not what it used to be. Being unproductive is not what it used to be. Being productive is not what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you can relax, allow, and actually any thoughts you have about the issue are not going to be accurate. So when you engage your thinking, why not read something difficult like this? Because you get time to understand it, and then realize it's saying what already is happening to you. And then you can enjoy speaking and talking complexly, knowing that it is not what it appears to be. It's not being arrogant. It's not jargonistic. It's not wrong, and it's not right. Why would this guy write this book? Who's it for? Who's he trying to explain himself?
It's for us, Bob. It's for us.
Yes.
For us to play with, Bob.
I'm the only person ever in the world that will discuss this book in a public setting, a digital electronic setting. No, there might be a few colleagues. Like, who gives this reviews? All right, they always have blurbs on the back. You have a professor of French at Virginia Tech in the United States. That's where they had the terrorist back in 2010. The guy came in and shot up the students. So, and this is Janelle Watson, professor of French. That's pretty obscure, right? Another person is in the Netherlands, an assistant, not even a professor, assistant professor of architecture at Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. Man, that's scraping a barrel. You know, he has to find someone who's got a half-time job. And then you got a reader in art theory. So you got somebody in French, somebody in architecture, and someone who does art theory and practice in an art market that ain't an art market in any normal sense anymore. So he's reading past stuff, art, and he's in the University of London. So look at what the three of them say. So Janelle Watson, sounds like a female voice, the French professor, says, this important contribution to the history of critical theory. It's not even an important contribution to the present. It's a contribution to the history of critical theory when there was critical theory. Establishes crucial connections among information theory, semiotics, Marxist critique, and affect theory. By confronting obstacles to signification, such as libidinal economies and commodification, Gnosko provides a much-needed, you guys need this, a much-needed rereading of theories of signification, which you've never heard of, demonstrating that semiotics still matters in the age of big data, global consumerism, and Bob. Oh, sorry, visual media. Visual media, not Bob. Demonstrating that semiotics still matters in the age of big data, global consumerism. So in other words, these guys teach semiotics and are happy that someone came up with a book that sort of pretends it's still relevant. You got that, Bert? I see Bert's hanging in here somewhere. I don't know what time that is Bert posted. So that was the Virginia Tech. So some of her students may have been killed by the terrorists. So then the guy in the Netherlands, he says, Gnosko reiterates the call for semiotic disobedience. Have you guys been doing well? Have you been keeping your semiotic disobedience up to date? And we have to do a new kind of semiotic disobedience. Most crucially, the plea is not predicated on the facile rejection of the discursive in favor of the pathic, getting very close to Bob's holiopathic. Most crucially, the plea is not predicated on the facile rejection of the discursive in favor of the pathic. Rather, Gnosko's intricate mapping of the interface between expression and content remains necessarily contingent. In other words, we don't know what we're talking about. We don't know how to say which way it's going. It's very contingent, depending on who's reading the book. Hence, semiosis is a critique. A must-read for those living under the regime of semiocapitalism. That's everybody. Or not. None of us are living under it. It can barely survive itself, semiocapitalism. Right? So a must-read for everybody or a must-read for a minority of 10 people. One people less than Bob's audience. Bert says, got it, Bob. Bert's witnessing this crazy talk. He's hearing it. Then, are you guys there? I don't get any humor. Did you get knocked off? Where are you? No, you're all there.
Yeah, Bob.
Here's an anonymous person, but they just dropped off as soon as I clicked it. Anyways, the third reviewer, Simon O'Sullivan, over there in Shawland and near Cornwall, talking about Gnosko. In his characteristic rigor, precision, and scholarly attention to text, Gnosko offers up a wide-ranging, compelling history and theory of semiotics as both critical and creative practice. So he's being an artist as well as being a critic. With tour de force readings of key post-structuralist thinkers and its own original insights and contemporary case studies, this book effectively rewrites sign and affect theory, which you people here, never heard of. Maybe a few students who went to university heard about sign and affect theory. It's a must for all those working at the leading edge of the theoretical humanities. Well, that's me. I'm working at the leading edge of theoretical humanities. Now, could they dare bring in ion contributions to the matter? We only got a minute, so where are you people? Get ready for the countdown. What'd you do, mute? Did I get disconnected? Let's see if Bert can hear me. Can you hear me, Bert?
I'm here, Bob. Oh, I'm just finishing off my breakfast, and I'll be with you in 1 minute, back on the mic.
Well, wait a minute. No. Engage this. Hold off on the breakfast, because we've only got 2 minutes left.
Okay.
For the recorded part. Then we can talk without the recording. But what do you think of these reviews? These are nanocultures. Tiny, tiny cultures, right?
Nanocultures. Yep.
And they should say, Bob reiterates the call for Gnosko's disobedience. Bob's plea is not predicated on the facile rejection of Matthew Hurtado in favor of Randy, whatever his last name was. Rather, Dobbs' intricate mapping, or Neverett's intricate mapping of the interface between Payday and Dr. Dean's show remains necessarily contingent. All right? Hence, Bob, as a critique, is a must dance for those living under the integration of cellular macronomics. Cellular macronomics. You get that? Come on,
yeah.
You only got a minute left.
No.
You got 30.
Bert,
oh, you didn't get it? She didn't
Bert
get it?
Says,
nomics.
Bert
nominal.
Says yes, Bob,
I'm
loud and clear.
I'm still here, Bob. I'm awake. I'm here.
Well, wait, Neufeld shows up. Kick-ass show. He's probably been listening for 15 seconds. Kick-ass show. Heard most. Oh, he says heard most of it. Talk soon. Well, fuck, Neufeld. Call in.
Call in, Dave. We're fading. Talk
what time is it in Dave land? It's 4 in the morning. Maybe he's got an alibi. He's got to go to work or something. But call in for 10 minutes and give us your interpretation of all this stuff, Dave. Straight up your alley.
Be our captain.
Okay. He didn't hurt anybody. We didn't hurt anybody.
I didn't get hurt really bad either, Bob.
Just a bit of semiological disobedience.
Semiological, yes, that's right. Disobedience. Thank you, everybody, for pretending to participate. Again, we have failed to reach the world.